Everybody, welcome to the Brian and Pete podcast. Pete is out there being awesome somewhere. We bless Pete. Pete, wherever you're, whatever you're doing, wherever you are in the world, we just say, go Pete. Very excited for whatever God has for you this week. Today I get to spend some time with Naomi Sterrett of Celtic Worship. And maybe you know Celtic Worship, maybe you're aware of their ministry. But I have for a long time been wanting to interview her about her life and really her other sphere of influence. But Naomi, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for taking the time to be on our podcast.
Thanks. I feel like I should change my name to Pete to be here.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we all want to change our name to Pete in order to... but no, I'm glad you're here. And Pete's glad you're here. So we're all blessing you. So Celtic Worship, it's kind of a big deal. I love what you guys are doing, but how did you get involved with Celtic Worship? How did it start? What's the beginning there?
Yeah, well, the beginning was nothing to do with me. The beginning was a group of professional gigging musicians who all happened to be Christian and to be friends with each other, and they were playing at a festival called Celtic Connections, and that's a huge traditional music festival that happens in Glasgow every year. And they were all playing at different events, but there was no Christian event, no worship event. And they thought, okay, we've got all these people gathering in the city, we should put on a service. So it was Mary Marwick, who is the fiddle player, who arranged all that. And they did just a one-off service at Adelaide Place Baptist Church that was kind of Celtic arrangements of hymns that everyone knew. And I went along to that, and it was just incredible. It was a really moving event, a really significant event, because it was the first thing of its kind to take place during Celtic Connections. And it was never supposed to be a band. It was never supposed to be anything other than a one-off event. But people really liked it. People engaged with it. And so they were like, okay, let's do it again next year. But before that happened, a church in Paisley, Elam in Paisley, the drummer that Celtic Worship had at the time, we've had lots of different people in the lineup over the years, but the drummer Neil at the time, his church invited us to go and do some Christmas carols. Well, invited the band, sorry. I was attending because I'm married to the bass player. And Steph, who was doing lead vocals at the time, had a sore throat, and he was like, oh, if you're here anyway, can you just jump up on backing vocals? And so that's how I joined the band.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You got in via sickness and sore throat.
Yeah, I happened to be there. Right place, right time. And after that, we did a couple more events. But it wasn't really a band until the first album happened in 2018, I think that was.
Wow. Yeah. But what do you think is so special about it? I have my thoughts on why I think it's special, but what do you think is so special about that ministry, Celtic Worship?
I think it's really significant for people to hear worship and be part of worship where we use the instruments of our heritage. Mm. We're kind of melody-led with fiddles and whistles and bagpipes, and that's quite unusual to have that in Scotland, but it makes total sense because those are our instruments. That's our sound. And I think that people who have a longing for home as well, people who are abroad. We have quite a big listener group in America. They have this like longing for home and also a nostalgia that ties up into a lot of the hymns that we do. And it really helps people in worship. I think it reminds them of their first encounters with Christ. It reminds them of their first love and that sort of, like, the songs they sung as children or the songs they heard their grandparents sing. And that feels significant to them. I think the thing that makes it special in my eyes, or the reason that I love it so much, is because it's an expression of worship that feels really natural because I'm singing in my own accent, which so often in Scotland we don't get to do, because songs are written for American voices or Australian voices or English voices. I'm talking about in contemporary worship, and they're amazing songs and they're brilliant and we use them at church, but I think that there's a slight disconnect because often they don't suit the way we speak. And I want to speak to God, I want to worship God in my actual voice, in the way that I actually pronounce things. And we get to do that in Celtic worship, so it feels really free, feels very real. It's probably slightly disruptive to, I don't know, like, Brian, you're originally American, now a Glaswegian, but it might feel a little bit disruptive to you at points where you're like, oh, I wouldn't say that word like that. But I obviously lead worship at your church, and before me there was an English guy, and when he sang, I would just automatically sing in an English accent. So it's really fun as part of Celtic worship to kind of embrace the ugliness or what other people can see often as an ugly Scottish sound, and just be like, this is what we sound like. I'm not going to change that to speak to God. I'm going to use that.
Wow, your answer is a million times better than my I had the most basic answer. I just have such a passion for cross-denomination everything, praying together, unity, and just when I've gone to different Celtic worship things, you just see people from so many different churches, a wide spectrum of believers gathering together to worship united. And I just think that's really powerful, but
yeah,
your answer was so brilliant. I love that.
No, I agree. I think the cross-denomination thing is so powerful.
It is.
Like, you were there at our most recent Glasgow event, and
yeah,
there's people from every background in that room.
It was packed.
Yeah. And we were like, what just happened? But also, we've made it a rule in the band that we're not allowed to all attend the same church. Hmm. And I think that that is really significant as well, and that means that we don't come across as part of one group that's exclusive that other people can't be a part of, and that's something that we've made, yeah, we've made that a rule. We can't all attend the same church, and we must all serve on our local worship team, because we can't lead nationally if we don't lead locally.
Wow.
And I think that those rules are really helpful for the cross-denomination stuff.
Oh, wow, powerful. Oh, and I didn't even, my main focus of having you on this podcast wasn't actually about Celtic worship, but I just find it so fascinating and so thankful. I'm sure so many of us are thankful. The stories that I've heard from people even across the world, like my friend Erica in Seattle, I knew in high school, just the ministry that you've had to people. It's music's powerful, worship's powerful, and everything you're saying about the Scottish heritage vibes, and it really does resonate. And thank you. So thank you. And thank you to the whole team. But what I really wanted to talk to you about today, what I really want to talk to you about is your work as an actor in Scotland. Like, you've been an actor for years, and tell me how you got involved in acting and your heart for that.
Yeah. It was never something that I was going to pursue. It was never an ambition. I wasn't somebody who grew up desperate to be on stage. I wanted to be a PE teacher. But
you wanted to be a PE teacher?
Yeah, like physical education.
Okay, great.
But I did better in my drama exam at school than I did in my PE exam. So when it came to applying for courses after school, I needed a course that I could defer entry to because I was going to YWAM. And so drama was one of those courses. So I thought, I'll go and do that and I'll be a drama teacher. It's free to go to uni in Scotland. Woohoo! So I was like, I might as well go, even if I don't want to do the thing. So post YWAM, had been stirred and had felt this sort of, I don't know, like missional calling, but also wasn't really sure because there was no nation specifically on my heart or mind. thought about going back on staff, but I was like, I've got this place at uni, I'm just going to go. So I went, and it was very theory based and it was really interesting and I enjoyed it. But then after my second year, there was the opportunity to apply to a vocational actors training course, which would mean going from a class of 60 to a class of like 18. And I just really liked the sound of it. I was really drawn to it. I didn't know that being an actor was a job or was going to be a possibility for me. But the course I'd be moving on to still meant I could be a drama teacher at the end if I wanted. But I started that course and it was the chances of getting in were so low. And so at that point I prayed and I was like, Lord, if this is something that you bring me into, like, I'll take notice. I'll take notice. Like, is this what you're calling me to? Got on the course and just had the best time. Just loved being around people, loved connecting with people and storytelling with people. And God moved so dramatically in the lives of so many of my course mates. And there was so much resistance during that time as well that was difficult, but so much fruit. Like people coming to me between classes wanting prayer, or like during that time one of the staff members was actually a Christian, and she was the only Christian that I knew in the industry, and she died during our third year, and I went to the funeral with somebody on my course who had taken a bunch of substances beforehand. And we're sitting there and she suddenly sobered up and then had this overwhelming Jesus experience. And she's holding on to me and she was like, what's happening? Like, what is this? And I was like, this is the Holy Spirit. Like, so many incredible moments like that that gave me a sort of a taste of what it was like to be, I guess, to be a missionary or to be like somebody who had read about or learned about at YWAM, his life's purpose was to know God and make him known, was to respond to the Great Commission, but in this context of being at uni.
Wow.
So that's now, how I got into it.
From my outside perspective, it seems like the world of acting is a place where Christians go and their faith dies. Like that, I don't want to like overstate it. And I am not in the world, so I do not know, but just kind of from an outside perspective, why do you think I might think that, or why is it so hard to be a Christian in the world of acting, at least in Scotland? What is so hard about it?
You know, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world. I only know what it's like here, but I've seen a lot of people sort of dip their toe in the water, like Christians decide, oh, I want to do this, and they either have totally compromised and have distanced themselves from Christ, or they've walked away from the industry, and that's okay. So
tell
frustrating.
And so they go in and they kind of either just huck their faith to fit in with the industry,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Or deny their faith?
Yeah.
It's
just reject it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of pressure, but there's also a lot of rejection. And I think that it can feel like a emotional beating a lot of the time. You're constantly putting yourself out there and you're being written about in the newspaper, you're being criticized publicly, you're going for job after job and you're getting rejections, and sometimes like your faith just grows really like weary in those situations. And I felt it myself at points where you're like, nothing seems to be working. Nothing seems to be happening. I'm praying, maybe God's not leading me here. So then I guess that sort of pushes people away from the industry. And then there's the other side of it where you get into the industry and you're in the circle you need to be in, but there's an expectation of how you then live in that circle and what you believe and how you operate. It's very competitive. It can be dog eat dog. And you're constantly fighting other people for work. So it can be hard to be a Christian in that environment. So it's easier to kind of, to not, I think, point.
Yeah. Wow. Rejection. I underestimate that. I mean, rejection is such a powerful fear that I see people having at so many levels. You know, as a pastor preaching, like, oh man, are people going to leave because of this? Or what, like at so many, you know, friendship levels, I mean, rejection is, and yet it's such a massive piece of your industry. Wow.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of prayer behind you. You pray, you know, I'm going to guess your husband prays for you. But your mom prays.
My mom, she's a legend.
You know, Auntie Margaret prays.
they're such faithful prayers. And I think especially, you know, I had a gap when I left uni. I had a gap of a couple of years, 2.5 years or so, where not a single job came through. Not a single job. And it was so disheartening because I'd felt... in that time, I'd felt God speak really clearly, like, this is the call I'm putting on your life. I don't want you to, like, run off to London or run off somewhere else. Like, you're called into this, the Scottish entertainment industry. And nothing was happening. And I was doing all the things that you're supposed to do. And nothing was happening. And there was so much prayer. And I remember, Brian, one of your sermons in your Joseph series where you said... breakthrough can happen in one single moment. And, you know, the day that Joseph got out of prison, he woke up in the morning not knowing he was going to get out of prison. And I just clung on to that and felt like God gave me this image of, like, one brick being removed from this ceiling above me. And then there being that little bit of light, and then suddenly the whole thing just blowing open. And that's kind of been what I've seen in my career over the last few years. One job opened up, and then suddenly, like, it's just been job after job, which has been amazing. But all jobs kind of hard won through prayer and the prayer of all the people around me, which I really appreciate. And I've got some, you know, great moments where I've been like just in despair, and my mum and my auntie and my friends have just like prayed so hard, prayed for me, and we've seen really miraculous things, which is cool. But, you know, my first job, I was like, finally, God has answered this prayer. And day one, at the lunch table, the director was like, do you know who I wouldn't work with? I wouldn't work with an effing Christian. I was like...
first day, first job.
it's finally happened. Like, it's finally happened. And, like, what do I do? And I think that that was a really defining moment for me because... I was like, oh, if I deny Christ right now, like, that's it. That's it. Like, that's not cool. So I was like, I hope this doesn't make you feel uncomfortable, but actually I'm a Christian.
You said that in that moment.
Yeah.
Day one.
Yeah. And after that, for my next few jobs, I was like, right, I need to get this into conversation before anybody has the opportunity to say anything. So... I would then try and find opportunities in the morning of day one on jobs to always just be like, yeah, so, oh, what time, are we working Sunday? Because I need to go to church. Like, trying to, like, get it in, which I don't have to do now, which is great, because the industry has changed so much since then.
That's brilliant intentionality. Like, it's so, so powerful. But so many people have those testing moments in their lives where there's the moment and it's right at the beginning and they choose their path. I marvel. I'm like, wow, you in your first day after almost 2 years, a year and a half or something like
two
that.
And half years
of two and a half years. And then you get first day first. Naomi,
it's funny because I don't know. I guess the significance wasn't clear at the time, but I suppose looking back, you're like, oh yeah, that was choosing a lane.
That's great. Now, you've had some really awkward moments. And it's some really great moments in this video. Every once in a while, I get little glimpses of it. Is there any like awkward moments where, I mean, besides the first day of your job, where you've had a Jesus challenge moment and yet maybe eventually somehow there's been an opportunity later on?
Yeah. Do you know what? I feel like there's been awkward moments on every single job. And then there's been fruit from those awkward moments. Like even from that first job, one of the later jobs, I ended up working with somebody else who was at the table at that time.
You weren't alone at the table when that was said?
No, this was in front of everybody.
I imagine it's like you and the person.
No.
So everybody at the table is there?
Yeah, it wasn't like loads of people. There was like 4 or 5 people.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was horrible. I went home and cried. There was somebody at that table who I ended up working with on a later job. And I remember her, you know, on that first day was like, she obviously felt uncomfortable and awkward in the moment, but, you know, was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to say I wouldn't work with a type of person, but I'm really not interested in having a conversation about God. And then she was like, one day at this later job in rehearsal, she was like, Naomi, could we do Amazing Grace as a warm-up? And I was like, yeah, okay. And then we just like had this moment of quiet and all sang Amazing Grace together, and she cried. And I was like, well, that's like great fruit from that earlier awkwardness. Or lots of little comments about God botherers or whatever. It feels unfair though, because I feel like I don't want to, because there has been later fruit, I don't want to be like, oh, this person said this awful thing. When actually I've built relationships with these people now and they're legends and I can see God moving in their lives. One thing that is awkward is some of the things that you're asked to do, and you have to balance like, is this really something that God's okay with me doing? Is he not okay with me doing this? And I had one awkward moment that I think we spoke about on Family Time, Brian, where I was just so, it was coming out of fasting week. I was praying about this job and I was like, this job would be, it just seems impossible at this point. But like, and it's been COVID time, like financially, I really need some work. It would be great for my career to do a bit more TV. My favourite actors in this TV show, it would mean a lot of time with her. It would be so cool. It would be such a learning opportunity. But there's a sex scene in it. And I was like, this feels like it's not for me. And my mum and my auntie were on a FaceTime call to me, and they were like, you know what, like, let's just pray that you get this job and they cut that out. And I was like, you don't understand how this industry works. That's not going to happen. And then, lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. I got a phone call being like, oh, so you've been offered this job. And just so you know, they've cut out the sex scene. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Like, what? So awkward moments like that, that through prayer, thankfully, have been avoided.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about all the compromise situations. How do you think, it's probably very significant for you to be even putting your cards on the table at the very beginning. Just be like, this is who I am. This is what I'm about.
Yeah. To be honest, it's a lot easier now because I'm kind of more in a more established place in the theatre in Scotland, where people are ready to listen and to change things if they don't suit. And I also have a brilliant agent now who totally gets me and is so respectful and is so wise, and who I really trust to have my best interests at heart. But earlier on, that was more difficult, and there's all sorts of things like, I remember being asked about a TV show that I won't say the name of, and they're like, are you comfortable riding a horse? And I was like, actually, I hate horses. I can't ride a horse. Don't even want to be anywhere near a horse. And then they were like, oh, because there's this part for a topless horse rider. And I was like, what?
The horse is the problem.
You should have led with that. Yeah, lots of moments where I was like, oh, or even little things like, will you go up for this gambling advert? I'm like, well, actually, that's destroyed a lot of the lives of the people in my city. So no, I'm not going to go for a gambling advert. Like, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know how I got onto that, but
it's great. Something in the that I've just noticed in your life, and kind of watching, you know, when you get shows and when you get jobs, often you're away from home for a long period of time, and you know, you'll be up on this island, or you'll be out, and you're away from here, you're away from church, family, again, months at a time sometimes. And it feels to me like what I would call an isolation season. And I think a lot of people have isolation seasons in their life, whether it's just because they are alone or because of work or travel or just for a lot of reasons. Isolation seasons, we talk about rejection being a big issue. Mm. Yeah, isolation is also a big issue. So how do you navigate? Because isolation seasons often bring upheaval to people and really rock their faith, their world at certain points. Not many people navigate them well. It seems like a learned thing. So how do you navigate those isolation seasons, staying focused, staying strong, especially in a, I don't want to overplay this, but a hostile environment to Christianity sometimes? Thoughts about isolation seasons?
Yeah, I actually think there's so many benefits to it, but you're right, it can be really disruptive, removing yourself from your life, your church community, your home. For me, my husband can be really hard to be at a distance from everybody you love and be doing a really intense job at the same time. But I guess the sort of key things for me are being really intentional about journaling every day. And I know you and Pete have discussed journaling in the past on the podcast, but for me, it's something that kind of has to happen every day.
What does that do for you? How does that, what do you do?
It kind of like pins down my prayers, but also is my moment of like listening and taking note of anything that I sort of hear or feel God impress on me. And that is so vital, especially that listening moment before going into another day of being away from home and working with people and often living with people as well. So journaling, I would say praying over the spaces that you're in, because if you're not usually in them, like you don't know what that environment is really. So quite often I'll find myself in hotel rooms or in some cases like big old creepy houses, and just taking time to ask Jesus into that space. Or for me, it might be different in different industries, but dressing rooms are where you spend so much of your time. So like getting in early before everybody else in order to pray over that space or to worship in that space is really significant. I think that praying for other people that I'm working with as well is a really important way to start my day when I'm away. Engaging with church as much as possible. So like I am at a church, we're at a church that streams, which is great, which means I can still be part of it. But when I'm traveling, I also really like to go to the church wherever I am. So that really helped me. I did one job that felt so lonely because it was a one person show on an island. And I went to the church there and made friends or random people and went to their like houses for lunch, and that was a really lovely way of like keeping myself sane but also keeping myself close to Christ.
Wow, there's a lot of good tips there. That's fantastic. If you were going to go from the beginning, what would you do differently if you could go back to young Naomi, year one of the journey? Like what would you want to do differently? What would you want to tell yourself about the challenges ahead? How would you want to, I mean, whether it's dealing with rejection or isolation or like, or just awkward moments, how would you want to counsel young you for the next season?
I think it's love to go back and tell myself, you don't have to say yes to everything. I think as a freelancer, you get into this routine of being like, you're like fighting for work. And so you have to just say yes, even when it's not a good fit, or even when it's uncomfortable, or even when it means like overworking. And I think that I would go back and be like, chill out, like discern and ask God specifically, like, is this for me or is it not for me, rather than just being hungry and saying yes to everything. I'd probably
so you're saying that just because you have an opportunity, maybe even you've prayed for opportunities, yeah, and you get an opportunity, it still doesn't mean that that's the clearest answer. You still want to keep, yeah, discerning through the whole process.
And I feel like I've learned that over time, but only because the Lord's been so gracious with me and has given me a gut feeling about something, and I've been like, oh no, maybe that's just fear, and gone along with something, and then thankfully he's given me more warnings, more proddings, and I've been able to get out of situations, but I just wish I wasn't in them in the first place. So I think I would encourage my younger self to be more discerning when opportunities come up, and I'd like to go back to that Naomi who didn't work for, well, I did work, I just had to do really, like, I had to do a lot of nannying and a lot of, like, video editing jobs and things that were really random, because I felt like I'll be disobeying the word of the Lord if I take on a job that's not the thing that he's called me to do. And I don't think that that's necessarily right. I think as well, I'd probably give myself a little warning, like, in terms of straddling both worlds, it's probably never going to be that comfortable. Okay. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah. And I'm sure that very similarly, like, advice that you'd give Christians going into the acting world, at least in Scotland, who don't want to lose their faith. Like, you're like, okay, here's my advice. If you want to go following Jesus for the long haul, here's what I would advise for you.
I would say it probably is that straddling two worlds thing. Like, you're not going to find an easy fit. It's not going to be very clean cut. So you need to learn how to live in both worlds. And if you're dependent on God and not on the voice of the people around you, then that's going to be really helpful. Yeah.
I mean, also, you've mentioned you want to get, like, people, your mom and Auntie Margaret, Catherine and Auntie Margaret, praying for people. Like,
get people praying for you.
But yeah, getting people praying. I was just teaching Second Corinthians, and I'm amazed at how often Paul shamelessly appeals to get people to pray for him. And it feels really awkward to me to, like, get people, yeah, to pray. And yet it's really significant. It's really powerful. Yes. You've mentioned discernment several times. I'm a huge, huge fan of encouraging people to grow in this however they can, not just wisdom, but, like, being able to discern this is what God's saying or this is what how God's leading at the moment. I think it's key for every field, every pastor, every Christian, every time we're making decisions. You know, the discernment. How did you find yourself growing in discernment? Do you remember what they were teaching you in YWAM, or where did you grow in this?
I think that the growth in that area is maybe in my very specific niche little corner of the world been more about learning to hear the voice of God, and so that the discernment coming in that way, if that, yeah, makes sense. So, like, taking a situation and asking to hear God's voice on that has been what's helped with discernment. Or asking God, like, I have no clarity, I can't see the wood for the trees, so I'm going to need you to just give me an instinct here, give me your Holy Spirit, give me your leading, or give me a word from someone else. And not, yeah, being worried about, you know, chatting it through with someone else doesn't mean you're not listening to God. It just means you're seeking wisdom from other wise people.
You mentioned that it feels like a gut. You feel it in your gut sometimes, rightness, yeah, and wrongness.
Yeah. Just that, you know, when you're like, oh, I can't shift this, but something, mm-hmm, isn't right.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the opposite of when people say, oh yeah, I felt a total peace about it. It's like the opposite of that is the total unrest and the tension and the conflict that you feel in your body, or I can't sleep, or this is filling my mind, this is consuming me, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah, you've probably learned the hard way, Like just ignoring that and then, oops, I should not have ignored that.
Yeah, I had one situation come up with a job, and on paper I was like, this is great. This is like a long contract. It's a great part. It really seems like it suits me. Of course, I'm just going to say yes straight away. And from that first yes, I just had this like weird feeling, but no reason to feel that feeling. Like no actual evidence to support the strange feeling I had. And it was a few months I was booked into that job to doing it. And it came to signing the contract and I just couldn't do it. Like there was just this resistance in me that I was like, I feel sick. Like I feel really conflicted about this. And it was, I think, ultimately because they hadn't sent a final script through. So I thought I could be signing up for anything, really. And I prayed about it. And I was like, I actually think I've been disobedient to your voice, God. And I think that you didn't actually want me in this job. And I need a way out now. And in his grace, he gave me a way out. But I had to say, I had to give them a reason, and I had to say, listen, this is like compromising to me. This job is compromising to me in several ways. And one of them is my faith. And one of them is, actually, I think there's aspects of this that are really anti-Scottish. And I think that this is offensive in its content to people from islands. And like, you know, I had to give all these reasons. And I felt so defeated afterwards. And I was like, that's me. Because I've been out of the game. I've not been auditioning for things because this was a long job. And then out of nowhere, I got a Twitter message from this company that I'd like studied at uni and admired so much, being like, hey, can we get your email address? And they'd seen me in a different show and they cast me on the spot for a show that was happening at the same time as that other show would have, with better pay, hey. A longer time period. And it was one of the best jobs of my life. It was like a site specific job in a swimming pool where I got to do like stunts, and I was like, oh, like God, you were so gracious to like let me off when I was probably disobedient to your lead in there. And then you restored everything and you gave me more than I could have had otherwise. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, almost like a convergence of your PE background.
That's it. Yeah.
A few final questions here. How can pastors and church leaders and intercessors and just fellow Christians better support and encourage people like you who are in the acting community or in any challenging field like this?
Yeah, I think, of course, praying for them. Like this, as an, you know, we used the word hostile before. This industry can feel hostile, but I actually think it's changed. I think it's changed so much, and I think there's such an openness. And like, my pals are so open. They're so spiritually open right now, and I want them to see Jesus and not go down other spiritual avenues. So be praying that this openness, this hunger is met by God. And there's not that many Christians in the industry. So like, I can't be with all those people, and neither can the other, what, five Christians in Scotland who are working in this industry be with all those people. So like, Holy Spirit has to meet them in dreams and do those dramatic things. I think a really practical way that church leaders and people in churches can support those working in areas like the performing arts or more kind of unusual industries is to just bear in mind that like, we are straddling two worlds. Like, I don't feel completely understood at church and I don't feel completely understood at work. And for me, that's really helpful that my husband is a musician, because he sort of walks that same line. But, you know, there's moments in church where people ask you things like, so is that like your actual job? Or I heard someone say to my husband recently, so is that what you want to do? And you're like, you have no idea. Like, he's worked his socks off and has a significant role in the music industry in Scotland, and you're being so insulting. When you tell me you're a lawyer, I'm like, not like, oh, so is that what you want to do? So I think there's really like practical ways that we can support people working in this industry and acknowledge, like, you're straddling a line and I don't get that line, but like, how can I pray for you? Or one of the things that I really love, especially in the last year and a half, is that so many people from church have turned up to shows, and it's really nice, because then the friends that I'm working with are like, who are all these people? Where are they coming from? And one person said to me after a show lately, all your friends are really good looking. And I was like, oh, thanks. He's like, where are they coming from? I was like, church. But people like notice when you're supported. And I know for so many of my friends, they're like, wow, I'd love to have a community like yours. So I think, like, showing up for people and taking an interest, turning up to their events, or like if they're a visual artist, their gallery nights, or if they're a musician, their gigs. These aren't necessarily worship events, but they're so crucial to, like, that person honoring God with their gifts. And it's really cool that other people can turn up for that.
It sounds like those simple things are also giving them opportunities.
Like, yeah.
Like, you're setting them up for their mission. You're setting them up for... And even thinking about what you said about prayer and praying for people, it's not just that they would stand strong, but it's that they would have opportunities, that the opportunities would be opening up for them, for the conversations and for the fruit.
I think that's the same in any industry you're working in.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point in being there if you're not going to share with people? And I think that if you say to God, give me opportunities to glorify you in my work, He's gonna do it. Like, he's not gonna not. If it's for him.
Are you laying down the gauntlet? Are you just basically saying, hey, in your workplace, are you praying for opportunities?
Well, you should. Like, I think every day you should be asking God, what are you doing today, and how can I partner with it? And it doesn't matter what your job is. Like, you've been strategically placed there as a light, as someone who can love people. You know, in my industry in particular, like, there's so many people who've been hurt by church and who've been hurt and offended by Christians. And I don't think that there's a single day that can go by where, like, God can't show his love through me, or can't give an opportunity for sort of like the healing of that in people. I think that it's the same wherever you go, though. People are going to have had wrong impressions of who God is, or confusions, or they've going to have been hurt by Christians. And we have the opportunity to be part of that change, or part of that being healed, and part of their walk or back or to God for the first time.
Wow. Good. Powerful. Friend, we're running out of time. Is there anything else on your heart that you'd like to say?
I think just... I'd love to encourage people, like, as I was saying, an industry that seemed very hostile is now very different, and people are so open and loving people in that industry is like it's like my burning passion. Like, I just love loving the people in that industry, and God has given me really helpful opportunities to be able to, like, do that. So I guess, where is he? What burning has he put in you? Who is he giving you, like, in a really extreme, almost like bizarre love for? Who is he giving you that for? And maybe that's the mission field that he's calling you to.
It's never crossed my mind, but until I'm sitting here talking with you right now, like, it's never crossed my mind when I'm going to shows, whether you're in them or not. Well, you know, of course, the ones that you're in are everybody's priority. We're flying. But, like, whenever I'm going to, I'd never sit there and think, oh, I'm going to spend time on my way to this show praying that the people in this show will have opportunities to hear about Jesus, and that people in their field are, like, I don't spend a lot of time interceding for those sort of environments, but it seems so short-sighted of me to not be praying for either Christians in that environment or people in that environment that seems more open, is what you're saying.
It's so open. It's like people are so being so vulnerable. They're putting themselves on stage. They're opening themselves up to criticism. They're embracing nerves. Like, as long as there's nerves, there will be prayer. people wanting prayer, people asking for prayer, and people really needing prayer.
Wow, powerful. Celtic worship, you guys got anything coming up?
Yes.
That I can be heading to? What's going on? What's coming up?
We are about 70% through our new album.
Oh, amazing.
Which is very exciting. We're buzzing. We all went to Mary's, the farm that Mary grew up on, and wrote a bunch of songs, arranged a bunch of old hymns, and we're excited. We sort of, our concept for this album was just, what do we need more of in the church in Scotland? But we hope that that will also be useful for other people outside of Scotland as well.
Currently, what's your favourite song that's in the makings?
So we've not got names for them yet, but okay. We've got two on the album. One is currently under the title Christian Cheese.
Okay, Christian Cheese.
And one is
that's
under...
not the final title.
One is under Clubland Banger. And they're both, like, really up-tempo. Like, because as I said, like, part of the worship team at your church, and sometimes it's really hard to find a really, like, up-tempo, joyful worship song. And so both of these kind of fit that category, and they're just really fun, and I'm excited to bring them into church.
When do we look for these?
We just need to do melody parts and backing vocals, and then it'll be mixed and mastered, and I think that we'll be releasing it and then doing an album tour in the autumn. I think it'll be released in September.
Yeah.
And then a tour in October, November, I think. Oh, that's not confirmed yet.
Looking forward to it. Naomi, thank you. Thank you for this time. I really appreciate you. I really appreciate even just the years of watching you navigate these two worlds. And I marvel at what God's been doing in you, and but really through you, through your different fields. Just love seeing God's hand on your life. Thank you for joining this podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for being my pastor.
Right. Blessings, friend.
Bye.
We hope that you enjoyed today's episode of the Brian and Pete podcast. If you found this episode helpful, share with a friend and be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode. Brian is the pastor of Rehope Church, a multi-site church that started in Glasgow. He is also the founder of Scotland Bible School, a 3-year Bible school where students study every book of the Bible. Pete is the pastor of City on a Hill, a multi-site church across Edinburgh and the Lothians. He also leads Go Global, a family of hundreds of churches spanning 17 countries. If you'd like to submit a question to Brian and Pete, please email brianandpetepodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to having you join us for next week's episode.